And now the hard rock fireplace is converted into a soft plush chair that I'm about to sit down on. Actually, this cushion's pretty good right here. Not this one, this one. Yeah, I'll stay here. I'll stay right here, and I'll endure the pain for the sake of the service. Well, here we are. I'm glad to be here. Thank you, Mike and Dan. Thank y'all so much. It always feels like coming home. I always wanted some out-of-town relatives I could go see, and now I've got y'all and Shafters. I've got Michigan people that I get to drive up the highway and see. It's a blast when we go driving up the highway, so y'all should ride with us sometime. You'd never be the same. I'm the daycare keeper. I watch the kids. Robbie puts on an audio book, and never hears anything that goes on the entire trip. He's not even in there with us as far as he's concerned. He even moves the rearview mirror so he doesn't have to look at us. And I go from girls to diapers to babies to feeding to, I've got, you know, a hand up here holding up something for the girls, and I'm over here spooning food in the baby's mouth and trying to change him in the car seat. And so I'm like the daycare, but I have to move around. I can't sit in one place for very long. So we switched to this. We've got a really great deal on this custom van. I still have my minivan, and I can take it on short runs, and it's great, but I can't walk around in it, and I can't sit for very long. An hour is max for me, as a sciatic nerve thing going on. Anyway, so this van, an older couple bought it brand new. They live on the lake close to us, bought it brand new, and traded it in, and it has 65,000 miles on it. It's a 97 model, but it's only 65,000 miles on it. It's like brand new inside. And so the buy here, pay here lot got it as a trade-in because they had a new Escalade, a year-old Escalade that this couple wanted. So they sold it to me, buy here, pay here. So yay, we got to sell it for $4,500. Got that nice van. So it was comfy coming up the road. The chairs reclined way back, and I built a bed in the back and put memory foam mattresses on it. So I have to lay down about every 2 hours. I have to lay down for about 30 minutes to let my back do its thing. And so I'd climb between the girls and get up on my bed and lay right there, and I could still read to them or talk to them or whatever, and then climb back off the bed and go back to this chair and then go back to the front chair every now and then and say hey to Robbie, and he'd just give me a dirty look, so I'd go back to the back again. He doesn't like to be bothered. He likes to focus on driving, and he's a really good driver, so he's the best chauffeur that I've ever ridden with, so that's a blessing. But thank all of you. Thank you so much. And all my friends in the room, my Facebook friends, my family, y'all mean so much to me every single day when I wake up to see what you're doing and to be able to tell you what I'm doing and all the love that I feel for my family and for my kids. There's just no end to it, and I thank you for that. It's official. Y'all are the only people that ask me to preach now. I used to have probably 30 engagements a year, and I tried to figure out how to get them all in, and we've now whittled it down to 0 to 1. I get invited to Michigan. So thank y'all. You're exclusive. You're now my exclusive people that I get to go and preach to. I'm not sure somewhere along the way my doctrine changed, my life changed, my marriage status changed, and a lot of things changed, and all the people that used to like to hear me don't anymore, and they're just missing out is all I can say. I quit preaching pretty much. I forgot how. I was getting ready for this conference, and I told Robbie, I said, I haven't preached in a long time. He said, you never preached. You don't preach. I said, well, I mean, sit and talk to people. I don't know how to do that anymore. He said, it'll come back to you, I'm pretty sure. You're pretty good at that. So I quit preaching, though. Forgot how. I quit reading the Bible. You know, I'll look up a verse every now and then to prove to somebody they're wrong about something, but stopped doing that. So I'm not going to be preaching to you out of the Bible today. I hope that's okay. I quit counseling. You know, I did that for a long time, and now I just ask the people, okay, if you could do anything you wanted to do and you know that it'd be okay with God, what would you do? And when they tell me, I'll say, then do that. That's what God wants you to do right there. Just go do that. You'll be fine. And so, because people are going to do what they want to anyway. I figured out in counseling a long time ago, the only reason they're even counseling with me is to try to get me to agree with what they already think. So I just let them talk, and, you know, so I finally quit doing that. So I narrowed down what I was doing to poetry, and then Mike invites Dana, the greatest poet in the world, who I can't even do poems in front of her, so that knocked that out. So I'm stuck with singing. I can't play with Sarah in the room. That's kind of silly. And the poet is sitting over here, and it's like that. You heard about the guy, what was his name? John Smith, James Smith died in the Jonesville flood. And he got to heaven, and they said, we're so glad to have you here in heaven, and we're having testimony time today, and we want you to tell of your experience. What happened to you? He said, well, I died in the Jonesville flood. It flooded my whole backyard, and my tool shed got flooded, and I was trying to mop it up, and I slipped and hit my head and drowned in that much water. And they said, well, we want you to tell your story. You'll be up just after Noah. And it's like, what do I have to say after Noah tells his flood story? What am I, you know, what's it? That's how I feel reading a poem with Dana in the room, or playing the piano with Sarah in the room, or preaching with Mike in the room, or doing anything that I do. It's like, well, really? But it all, it's like a smorgasbord, though. You might go to, if you go to Golden Corral, somebody else may not even like fried green tomatoes, but it might be the very thing that somebody needs. And I'm good at bringing that weird dish to the table. Sometimes I feel like I'm at an Italian feast and nobody told me it was an Italian feast, and they have lasagna and eggplant parmesan, and I brought peanut butter and jelly. But there's some kids there that need peanut butter and jelly, so, you know, I'm good. And I brought my peanut butter and jelly today, but it's going to be good peanut butter and jelly. Music, that leaves me the thing that I do that I don't think anybody else can do exactly like me. They can probably do it better, but the singing part and putting my thoughts into words, those kind of things, I really, really enjoy. And I thank you. I believe music is very healing. The first time I saw Adam, we went and the defects actually called us and asked us if we would go be with this child while he was dying, because the doctor said he couldn't make it. He weighed 1 pound and 5 ounces. He had 2 level 4 brain bleeds the first week of his life that most likely caused brain damage. They're still saying, which is not true, you can see by looking at him. And he had 5 blood transfusions the first 2 weeks of his life. He was on life support 110 days. I go to look at this tiny little creature laying in this incubator, artificial womb they called it. And I reach my hand in there, and he's strapped down, his legs are strapped down, he's got wires and things going in every part of his body, and he's on the ventilator, and he's, you know, he can't open his eyes. They tell me he's probably blind and deaf. His lungs are like wet tissue paper. He's probably not going to make it through the weekend. And I put my hand in there on his one free arm, and I touched him like that, and he went and grabbed me with his little tiny fingers. And I broke. I began to just weep, and I just stood there. And the nurse came and gave me a nice back massage. And she said, "It's okay, it's okay." I said, "I know it's okay." And he held onto that finger, and I said, "Little buddy, if you will fight to live, I'll fight to be your dad." And I just started singing this song to him about, you know, if you, because singing's what I do. And it's like, life's a musical to me. I mean, it may have something to do with that, you know, part of my life that we don't talk about. Yeah. But life's just a big musical, so I just start singing at appropriate times and inappropriate times as well. But I start singing this little song to him about, if you will fight to live, I'll fight to be your dad. I swear he squeezed my finger. No, you know, probably a spontaneous, or maybe he squeezed my finger in agreement. But me and him made a deal that day. And I went back to that hospital over and over and over and over again and sang to him. And the nurses, I'd come in and they'd say, "Our singer's here." And so they made me sing to the other babies. And music is healing. And I believe I think if there was a calling in the Bible that you could label me with, it would probably be psalmist. I was never a pastor. I entertain people pretty well and I can get my point across. So I talked to people for 25 years and pretended I was a pastor. But really, I'm probably a psalmist if you wanted to label me with something from the Bible, which don't bother. But because I love music so much and I love to put things into music. And to me, if I say, "You fight to live and I'll fight to be your dad," that's good. But if I sing it, "If you will fight to live," there's just some power behind it that's not there otherwise. And I don't know why that is. And maybe I've just imagined that power to be there. But nevertheless, I do it. I mean, if I'm at Kroger, I say, "Do you have purple grapes?" You know, it's better than just asking sometimes. "I'd like some artichokes." So, you know, some people make fun of me sometimes. But I don't know why we sing some of the songs we do sing. I was doing the nursery one, a nursery rhyme. But even in church world, the song I grew up singing, my grandmother was a Methodist preacher's wife. My granddad was a Methodist minister. My uncle's a Methodist minister. My dad was a Methodist minister. My aunt's a Methodist minister. We were Methodist from way back because you could drink and still go to church. Well, I got saved, so I'm not a Methodist. I got saved from the Methodists. But my grandmother was also in a cult called the Eastern Star. You probably know about this cult. She was like the leader of the Eastern Star for Knoxville, Tennessee. And which was definitely a cult group, according to my charismatic church, because right. She had a witch's ring on. So, you know, then I found out my grandmother's a witch all this time. All so silly. Such silly games we all play. But she taught me, "Oh, be careful, little eyes, what you see." She would never approve of me watching porn, I'm pretty sure. "Oh, be careful, little eyes." Or even looking at bathing suits in this year's catalog. "What you see. For the Father up above is looking down with love." Yeah, love, aren't you? Mm-hmm. "Oh, be careful, little eyes, what you see. Oh, be careful, little hands, what you touch." I'm like, oh my God, God's watching me touch myself. "Oh, be careful, little hands, what you touch." And she would sing this song to us, "Be careful what you hear, be careful what you smell, be careful what you think." be careful, little mind. And she'd keep you in such fear by her 17th verse of everything you've ever thought to do. She had it covered. And the all-seeing eye was looking down, watching every move you made. And the song said with love, but the inference was, you're going to get fried for this. You know, this isn't good. This is not good. You just need to be careful what you do. And she taught me that, and so I would sing that, lay in my bed at night and think that and wonder, is there somebody watching me? And there wasn't the whole time. If I'd just known that, I could have had so much fun. I listen to worship music. And some of you can't do it because the words are just so far off from what we believe. But it's still the most calming, soothing music that I find. Yeah. And strangely enough, I had quit. I gave up on all church music and quit listening to any of it. And then Robbie the Atheist comes along. He was never raised in any kind of church. He's blessed. He never believed any of that mess to start with. He didn't have to unlearn anything. And for me to even be closely associated with a non-believer on his level was something. I wouldn't even be friends with somebody like him when I was in church world. That was dangerous to be friends with an atheist. Robbie didn't he never believed in all this stuff that I'm trying to unbelieve still. He never believed in it. Yet, I got in his car one day, and we have Sirius Radio, and the message, worship music's playing. And I don't get in his car. And I said, why do you have worship music playing in your car? Because I listen to country music. I want to hear about people getting drunk and committing adultery. But he said, when I want to listen to music, I want something good going on. I said, why are you listening to music, worship music? He said, it just soothes me. He's kind of high strung, a little bit. Y'all might not have noticed that, but he's a little high strung. He said, it soothes me. It makes me feel good. I like it. I said, are you listening to the words? He said, no. What does it say? I said, all kinds of weird stuff. He said, well, every song says weird stuff. He said, if I turned on any station, there'd be stuff that the singers were singing that I wouldn't agree with. Yeah. And he like enlightened me about worship music. Oh, and I'd go, he started playing it when Wesley was a little baby. He'd play it at night in her bedroom. And I was rebelling. I was like, I don't want to hear about the blood dripping off a cross and landing on somebody's soul. But there was something, I had to admit that there was something soothing, and she slept better with worship music than anything else. Now, we're going to see in our lifetime some new music that's going to come about, that maybe some of the stuff like we're doing now, and maybe that we can replace the worship music with. But for now, I listened to worship music, and I didn't realize exactly. A friend got in my truck recently, and I had the message radio was playing in my truck now. And the song was, you are beautiful, you are glorious, you are powerful, always victorious. And it's just like a, you know, like that. And he said, what are you listening to? Because he knows what I believe. I said, praise and worship. And he said, how do you do that knowing what you believe? I said, I just assume they're singing to me. And I said it kind of as a joke, but then it made sense. And now, ever since then, when I listen to praise and worship music, I just assume that these people are enlightened and they're looking in the mirror and understanding. I mean, and you can look in the mirror. You can look at me and say, you are beautiful. You are glorious. You are powerful. You're victorious. And so many of the words that we ascribe to an unseen God somewhere on a throne, somewhere in outer space, watching down, we can sing to each other. And we can sing, the enlightened soul can sing to herself or to himself, these beautiful songs of praise and worship, because we are worthy to be praised. Praise y'all. I worship y'all. Praise y'all for the way you cook and the way you smell, most of you, and the way you work and the way you design and the way you give and the way you smile and the way you laugh. Praise y'all. Praise y'all. So I'm into praise and worship again. I've just kind of changed the object of that praise and worship from an invisible Jewish grandpa sitting on a chair from TBN set somewhere in outer space to us, to humanity. Praise you. And I have no trouble worshiping doctors. When they bring a baby through, what my baby just came through, I have no trouble bending my knee and bowing down and saying, I praise y'all for what you have done. Thou hast done great things, I told his doctor. And he pointed up. I said, the ceiling didn't do anything. You went in there and did what you did to that baby. I praise you for that. It makes people uncomfortable a little bit, yeah, if they still have a religious bone in their body. And most people do. But that's praise and that's worship. So it fits. I just pretend that everybody's enlightened and they're singing to me. I learned some things last night. Did y'all? Mm-hmm. Did y'all like what you learned last night? I don't know. It was abrasive, Mike. It was, I'm telling you, it was hard last night. I learned that I am a woodpecker, and I am exerting myself trying to chop down a redwood tree. I like that analogy. And that really is, this can be so summed up in Wesley Jo coming home from school last week and laying her head on the desk, on the table and crying. She said, all the kids, or it wasn't all, it was half the kids, ate ice cream today and I didn't get any ice cream. I said, why didn't you get ice cream? She said, we didn't pay for it. I said, you have to pay for ice cream? Nobody told us. So I get on the phone, you know, call the teacher up and said, yeah, it's a dollar a piece per day. The kids have to pay for ice cream. And he said, Friday's the big ice cream day. That's when we try to get everybody to just do it on Friday, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm like, really? I said, well, so how many kids in the class don't have ice cream out of the 22? He said, probably 10 or 12 usually. I said, every day. He said, they don't have parents. They don't have money. They don't have parents. I said, then don't give the other kids ice cream. There's something wrong with that. How are you going to let some kids eat ice cream and the other ones can't have any? That's ridiculous. He said, it's just the way it is. I said, well, oh, dear. I said, I'm not political at all, but I think I'm a democratic socialist when it comes to children being treated equally and having the same things. Children that can't help it. If you're an adult, you can help it. And then I'm not that for you, but I am that for children. And I said, so we have to even the playing field somehow. So now, you know, I said something on Facebook and people sent me money. And now I've paid for ice cream for at least two classes every Friday from now for the next 4 months. They have ice cream coming. And what good did that do? Because the class next door doesn't have any. So, I know that. I understand that it's a redwood tree and I'm a woodpecker and I probably didn't make a big dent. But it somehow gave me joy to know that Wesley is relieved to not see 10 kids not eating ice cream. I don't know. So there's my excuse, Mike. I am a woodpecker, but I have lots of woodpecker friends that help me chop down trees. And sometimes we actually get a mighty redwood to fall, and it knocks down a couple while it's falling. So that's 3 out of 25,000. And it's kind of frustrating, but I just can't not. I think you're right. All right, let me peck on this one tree, children's ice cream tree. Yeah, I'm pretty good at ignoring all causes except kids, and I just can't figure out, and that's me. And I did that for me, more so I wouldn't feel guilty about the kids not having ice cream. I understand that, I do that. It occurred to me one day that I adopt children for my own benefit, not theirs. They also benefit from it. Don't get bent out of shape. But it's doing something in me because I feel like I'm a negligent parent on the first bunch I raised, and because my parents were negligent, and because I did so many things wrong that I can do right this time around. So a lot of it's probably for me, I finally had to admit. But that's an okay reason too. Everybody still gets fed and clothed and loved at the end of the day, and you know, and I get to do homework until I'm 76 damn years old. Oh, just kidding. Did I seem bitter when I said that? I didn't mean to seem bitter. I need a refresher course on kindergarten. I sit there every night at the table. I never did homework. I was too smart to do homework. And if I still made all A's and B's, and I never, ever did any homework. I wasn't wasting time at home doing homework. I did it on the bus, or I did it, you know, after class for a few minutes, what I had to get by. Didn't do homework. My kids never did homework growing up. My natural kids, they were homeschooled. All their work was homework, I guess. And now I'm sitting at a table doing homework after supper every night. And I'd rather have my nails pulled off with pliers. And I'm sitting there doing this. And every single night I look at Robbie and say, I was retired. I'm retirement age. Travel. I should be traveling. I should be, you know, I'm doing homework. And he has to, like, you know, him and his screwy doctrine, nothing's out of order. Nothing's out of order. That screwy doctrine. Yes, Robbie Joe is preaching to me. Nothing's out of order. You're supposed to be at the table teaching kindergartners at 58 years old. Nothing's out of order. I said, oh my God. I liked him better when he was an atheist. Now he's whatever Mike is, except he listens to worship music. I don't know. What a strange kid. Okay, I'm a woodpecker. Figured that out last night. And it's okay for me, for this season, I can be that. Quick update, we look at our pretty white van. We're in the van this time. The chapel, somebody asked last night about the chapel. It's coming along nicely. Don't know what I'll do with it when it's done, but we'll have a chapel. My plan really is we'll have our monthly meeting, just a gathering where we mostly eat and we do this and talk a little bit. But I want it to be a wedding venue, a place for weddings to support the children's home is the plan. And I'm so close. The walls are actually up, but we don't have wood on the inside of them yet. And there's just a few things. We're about $5,000 away, but we'll get the chapel done this year or by spring, I'm hoping. And then we can start weddings in the spring. and that's going to relieve us some income-wise. Chloe, and thank y'all. Some of y'all were a big part of this. Chloe's adoption is now, it's paid for all but $500. It's almost paid for $15,000 it ended up costing. And that one's done, off the books. Now it's Adam's turn. But he's only a $4,000 adoption. It costs money to adopt kids. It's not a free thing anymore. It seems like if you say, I'll raise this child for 18 years and give him everything he needs and take care of him completely, that some it'd be free to do that. No, you have to pay for the privilege of doing that. And y'all send all your best vibes and energy that I'll come to my senses because they know what a sucker I am. And they called me last week and said, well, we've got a mom. She's pregnant. She's on crack. She doesn't want the baby. She's already lost three. And it's going to be hard to find placement for this baby because the baby's going to be on crack the whole time it's in the womb. And we don't know what the baby's going to be like. So would you consider it's a little girl? I'm just going to tear the phone out and just not listen to take phone calls anymore. So how can... Because here I am, old Woody Woodpecker, back on the tree like that. Or, you know, I haven't even put... I'm trying to figure out how to pay for Adam's adoption. Now they're asking me about the next adoption. I said I wanted a children's home. I spoke it. I said, I'm going to retire from the ministry and have a children's home. And now I'm sitting here every day thinking, look at these children. Can't we have a children's home without children? Please. I should have rescued dogs and stuck with that. But Woody Woodpecker, that's me. I'm Woody. I found out last night I'm Woody Woodpecker, and my poop does not stink. No, my poop stinks. So that's what we found out last night. But I'm going to let Mike elaborate on that later. So that's where we are with Chloe and with Adam. Y'all helped me build the bedroom for Boaz. That's Adam's bedroom. It worked out. Boaz ended up in Canada with relatives, and we ended up with Adam, a bedroom. So that all worked out perfectly. Thank y'all, thank y'all, thank y'all. I could not... Adam's great. Adam is great. Oh, Boaz, you mean? Oh, Adam. Adam is wonderful. Every doctor tells us that he has exceeded anything that they ever expected for him by this point in life. The neurologist, we have to take him. Robbie was going to Macon an hour away 4 or 5 times a week. He was going to Macon to different specialists, the pulmonologist, the radiologist, the neurologist, the pediatrician. I mean, every day he was back and forth to Macon, back and forth to Macon. And the baby came home on a feeding tube, on oxygen. I sat up all night long watching a pulse ox machine. His oxygen would go in the 80s and the 70s and the 50s, the 80s. The baby would bounce up and down and up and down. And I'd be on the phone, and do we call the ambulance yet? And the child died in the ambulance going the way to the hospital with Robbie riding with him, and they revived him. And I mean, it was just a harrowing experience. And you can't sleep with a defect child, supposedly. If it's not a child. So the baby bed is like right here, you know, by my face. Even now, it's right. So I sleep with one eye open, but he's great. Even the neurologist said he cannot find any scar tissue from the 2 level 4 brain bleeds, which the scar tissue tells him what brain damage there might be in the future. And there's no scar tissue. He's fine. He's meeting every expectation and exceeding them. And I'm telling you, love has healed that child. It was a battle, but he was surrounded by love. And the neurologist said his environment healed him. He said, I'll give you that. Wow. He said, it was being with you guys 24/7, never dropped off at daycare, never left anywhere else. He had a schedule. He knew every time he opened his eyes that one of you would be looking at him to love on him. And he said, and whatever was wrong in that brain is healed. And parts of the brain that, you know, weren't damaged or being used to replace the ones that were, perhaps. He says, but they can't find anything wrong with him. I mean, he tracks, you know, whatever. Somebody walks in the room and he finds them and watches them and smiles at them, makes eye contact with them, touches. All of his motor skills are fine. He has a jerking motion that they're watching. I don't know if you noticed. The doctor, he'll just be sitting there and he'll just do like this. And that's it? But I said, well, it's either Tourette's or he's a Pentecostal. I'm not sure. But they're watching him to see if it might be a Tourette's kind of a thing, because he doesn't do it all the time, though. Some of y'all were sitting at the table last night, and he'll jerk about every 4 seconds and just like throw his arm up or hit you in the head or something like that. But it's when he's excited. It's when something's going on. It's not all the time, because he'll just sit there like a teddy bear, and then he'll go. Really? Well, yeah. That's a good one. See? I've got one that does it, and he says SOB when he does it, and it's not good. They're good Pentecostals, and he screams out SOB when he does it. This is So his mama don't know where he got that, but it's not working out good for her at church, so they had to quit church. But he's fine. And I think that's just excitement that he has going on. But anyway, at the risk of looking crazy because Dana is here, I wrote you this poem. See if you get it. It is good to be in your presence today. On the other hand, it isn't. Okay? Okay. Because if I were with you, then there would be two. And we know for a fact that is simply not true. So I can't be with you. I'm not glad to be here because here doesn't exist. And neither does I. But I cannot be pissed, for there isn't a stream and there isn't a flow. For there is not a me, as we all surely know. This could be confusing, but I'm not confused because there isn't an I'm. It's all just a ruse. I am not in pain and I don't like dessert. Without Mr. I, there's no cake and no hurts. There aren't any legs or feet or backs. And I did not come here. There was no me to pack or to drive or to speak. And there's no you to hear. So there can't be a meeting. Let's get this thing clear. I am you and you are me. I'm still learning, it's true. But if there were to, I'd be glad, so glad to be with you. Did I say one of them? So I'm not glad to be here because there's no I'm and there's no here. I'm not glad to see y'all because there is no y'all and there is no I. So I'm not glad to see you. See, I'm getting this straight. It's taking me a while. Why are we here? Somebody said, my sister said, why do y'all have those meetings? She said, because are y'all trying to convert people to your way of thinking? I said, oh, no, 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 no. No, I do it for the cake. I go for the fellowship. I don't know whatever else is there for. I go for the fellowship. But what I said to her is I said, we go to share what we're learning and to learn what we're sharing. And I think that's a good place to be. We're going to share what we're learning and to learn what we're sharing. Because as I'm sharing with you, I'm trying to learn what I'm saying. Because I'm not all here. I'm not, you know, and I've done this in every movement I've been through, if you want to call this a movement. I've entered into it and become part of it and didn't fully get it as I entered into it and begin to say it and do it and go through the motions of it. And at some point it clicked to the point where it's like, oh, that's what we believe. Yes. And I'm not slow in most areas, but in these shifts, these paradigm shifts that I've gone through spiritually, sometimes it takes me a minute to catch up. So if my phraseology or something I say is lagging behind, just trust I'll catch up at some point in the future. Probably when y'all are on the next level, I'll get to this one. And that's okay. I will find the treasures y'all left behind because we all have treasures. And life is about making discoveries. And then it's about, to me, it's about hiding those treasures for somebody else to find or not hiding them real well. I love to bring the girls a prize home and hide it from them and tell them I hid a prize for y'all in the living room. And they'll go in there and look. And of course, a corner of it is sticking out from under the curtain or part of it is out from under the cushion just enough so that they'll see it and know, you know, they'll find it. So when I dig up a treasure in life, I used to try to dig all my treasures up out of the Bible. And there are some good treasures in the Bible. There are. But I used to try to dig all mine up there. And now I'm digging them up all over the place in everything and in every way. And these treasures I dig up, they're for me to learn from and for me to share and for me to leave. And I'm trying to leave mine in the form of stories, in the form of Facebook posts, in the form of songs. I'm trying to think of creative ways to take the treasures that I'm seeing and learning and leave them so long after I've taken my flight to the next best place, my treasures will be left behind for people as if somebody would. I don't have any fancy jewelry to leave. I have a Rolex watch, but it's got too many L's in it. I didn't know it at the time. I bought it from a crackhead and thought, score, score, he scored. Too many L's. It's got two L's. Rolex only has one L. Mine has two. I was hoping he stole it from some rich lawyer or something out of his Jaguar, and I got to buy it for $20 to buy him a hit, but it was the wrong, too many L's. So I don't have any fancy jewelry to leave to people, but all mine's fake like Sarah's. But I have some good jewels to leave. I have some good thoughts and some good poems and songs and children's stories and poems and things that I'm going to leave behind. And I'm going to enjoy them while I'm here. And I don't even know what left behind means anymore. I don't even know. My mind is changing about some things. I got on the dumbest kick a while back, and I had it in my mind that I had to move some of my grown kids to Eatonton or either we had to at some point sell out in Eatonton and move to West Georgia. So when I was gone, Robbie would still have family. And this dumb thing got in my mind, and I dwelt on it for several months thinking, I've got to figure out how to do this. Now, I've got to replace what I have here, so I have to go, if I sell this, I have to go and duplicate it in West Georgia. We have to have the chapel, we have to have everything we have here, which I could rebuild it all, it's not a problem, and would enjoy doing it, especially if I got enough money for that to help have help building it this time. So I'm thinking, because the market's up, we're in my area around the lake, it's really up right now, so we could walk away now with some great equity and go duplicate what we're doing somewhere else and relocate him close to my kids and their spouses, because that's who our best friends are. That's who we hang out with mostly. And his family also lives in West Georgia. His dad passed away recently. I don't know if y'all knew that, but it's suddenly 54 years old, no problems, no reason, a heart attack, boom, gone. And Robbie doesn't talk about it very much. It's just, he just doesn't deal with that kind of stuff. But I thought, I need to get him 2 hours away up there. And so my mind started thinking like that. And then one day it occurred to me, well, he'll have kids and their spouses here. I just have to stay around long enough for Wesley and them to get married. So what's that, 20 years? I can do 20 more years. Are you kidding me? I'm great for 20 more years. I'm great for 40 more years or 80 more years. I can do this from now on. So I've kind of changed my mind about some of those things. But our treasure box, my little grandson Luke comes down to see us, and he has a treasure box that he carries around with him. And if you're really blessed, he'll let you look in his treasure box and even hold some of them. And I got to, he climbed up in my lap. He said, Pop, you want to look in my treasure box? I said, I do. He opened a cigar box. He opens the lid up. He has some marbles in there, some shiny rocks that might be gold, he told me. He has a cap pistol. Doesn't work. He said, don't work, but it's a cap pistol nonetheless. He's got some old keys in there. He has some pieces of glass that he found that are real pretty pieces of glass, and just various things like a little boy would have, a string, and you know, some shiny pennies that somebody gave him, a $2 bill that his aunt gave him. He was real proud of that $2 bill because you don't see those very much. But it's Luke's treasure box. Mm. And he trusted me enough to look inside it and to see these treasures, and they meant more to him than they would to anybody else. But as he shared them with me, they became very special to me as well. And I just really, really hope that I'm able to take some little treasure that I see. They're my little treasures. They may not mean much to you, but I'm hoping, and my sincere hope is that while I'm here, either from that piano bench or from sitting here or at a conversation at the table, that somehow I'll be able to sit in every one of your laps and open my cigar box. Not literally, I'd squish some of you. Dang, I'd be dead. But I want to open my cigar box, and I want y'all to reach in there and find something that's valuable to me and take it away with you. A piece of my love, a piece of my heart, a piece of the knowledge or the treasure that I've been able to gather. Do you remember the first time you heard a revelation or heard God or heard the voice of the Spirit or got supernatural direction from something other than the Bible or a prophet or a church service? That with me, I was in high school still. And that was back in the olden days. In 1977, when I was in high school, the teacher had us read The Catcher in the Rye. Did any of y'all read Catcher in the Rye?
Yeah.
This is probably close to my oldest possession, because I still have the same book that I had in high school. I still have The Catcher in the Rye. That's my copy of my book. And it's on my shelf. The Catcher in the Rye, J.D. Salinger. I don't know why it was a...
The Catcher in the Rye.
It's R-Y-E, a rye field. And that's a line from a poem. The Catcher in the Rye is a line from a poem, I think a Tennyson poem. I'm not sure which poem. But anyway, I've still got my notes that I highlighted spots in here. So I went to my bookshelf the other day, and I have probably 32 Bibles on my bookshelf. And they're all marked from one end to the other with every kind of marking you can imagine, every kind of color, every kind of note. They're valuable for somebody that wants to be in the vein of thought I was in. I need to just give them to my son, because that's probably what he's preaching occasionally, is some of the things I used to preach. And it might actually be a great help, because my system is so good of how I had certain things. If you circled a scripture, it meant turn to it. If you put a square around it, it meant just quote it. If you put a triangle next to it, it meant relate it to the other scripture with a triangle on the other page over there. Wow. So a really good system that somebody could probably use. I don't read them anymore. So I went to my bookshelf the other day. I'm looking at my hundreds of books. I have hundreds of books of every kind. have the Harry Potter collection up here offsetting the Bibles. It's just like they're, you know, I'll show y'all, here's Harry Potter. Harry Potter's on this side now. So I got all my books. But I wanted a word. I was wanting to hear something. I wanted to dig up a treasure from somebody else's cigar box. So I looked across the books and I saw The Catcher in the Rye. And I remembered that this book spoke to me, and I felt like it was spiritual in some way, and that I was hearing things in this book that I likened. That was the time in my life when I was starting to go to Pentecostal churches and hear the voice of God and thought I was hearing from Spirit. And I heard some things in this book and actually took this to Sunday school and showed my Sunday school teacher and said, I think God spoke to me right here. And of course he said, "Shita, ba, 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 come out of him, devil, come out in the name of Jesus, be loosed." So, you know, apparently God could not speak through anything except the Bible. So they kind of poo-pooed that idea. But I got my Catcher in the Rye book out and I said, all right, I'm going to find me something on page, you know how you do, page 189. I don't know what's on page 189, but I turned. I just found a place to start reading. You're going to start getting closer and closer. That is, if you want to. And if you look for it and wait for it, to the kind of information that will be very, very dear to your heart. Among other things, you'll find that you're not the first person who was ever confused or frightened or sickened by human behavior. You're by no means alone on that score. You'll be excited and stimulated to know. Many, many men have been just as troubled morally and spiritually as you are right now. Happily, some of them kept records of their troubles. You'll learn from them if you want to. Just as someday, if you have something to offer, someone will learn something from you. It's a beautiful reciprocal arrangement. And it isn't education. It's history. It's poetry. Wow. Isn't that profound?
That's really profound.
That's as profound as anything I've ever read in the Bible. And I stood there and I read that and I thought, I stood there weeping because it so spoke to my life at that exact moment and things I was thinking and things I was going through. And the power of the treasure just so spoke to me as I read these words. This is on page 189 if y'all want to get this. This may be my new Bible now. You can just flip and read stuff. The fish don't go no place. They stay right where they are. The fish right in the G.D. Lake. I just flipped to a random page of this. That's it. They stay right where they are. So that's some wisdom right there. That's just flipping them. You can find some wisdom. You can find that wisdom in anything because that wisdom's actually in you. Remember what Jesus repeated so much? He said, "He that hath an ear to hear, let him hear." He's not talking about these cartilages on the side of your head when he was saying that. You either have an ear to hear wisdom or you don't. And we do. And because we have that ear to hear wisdom, we don't have to have it read to us out of a Bible anymore. We grew beyond the book. We broke down the walls, the cell walls of the book, and don't even need it anymore because I found out that all that book ever did was remind me of something that was already inside of me. Any wisdom I ever read out of that book was just stirring up something that was on the inside of me. And it was sandwiched in a whole lot of BS and history and Jewish culture and misogyny and racism and 900 other things all crammed into leather covers. And there it was. And you could dig, I mean, you can dig out beautiful treasures there. Even a blind dog can find a bone every now and then. So you can find beautiful treasures in the Bible. Or you can find them anywhere. Why? Because you are the beautiful treasure.
Yeah.
You are that. Remember when Jesus told that story about that man who was going across that field and he found a treasure? I like this, the dishonesty of this. He finds a treasure, so he hides it. He covers it up with pine straw and goes and buys the property. And he's like, "I'd like to buy that acre over there." He's not telling him he found a treasure on it. Isn't that slick? Oh, slick Jesus. I was telling the disciples that's the way it was. He said, "That's the way the kingdom is." That's slick, isn't it? So the man hid the treasure, went and bought the field, and then the treasure was his. So I used to read that and I'd think, man, the treasure is, you know, this spiritual wealth of knowing God and these things, and I'm going to give everything I have to buy it. And then it occurred to me one day, I'm the treasure. I'm the prize. I'm not just somebody out searching for a prize. I'm the prize to whoever knows me. When you start seeing yourself as the treasure, when you start realizing that you're the gift, that you're the wisdom, that you're the... We need to think a little higher of ourselves, y'all. I don't know about y'all, but I beat myself down. I was taught to do that from the time I was little. My mother did it. She was the world's best at groveling and beating herself down and making herself look worse than she really was. And I could go on, but I won't. And I picked up a lot of those same ways. And for so many years, I didn't think very much of myself. And Christianity worked good for me because I was a wretch. I was a worm. All the hymn books told my story. I was an old worm and a wretch that needed to be saved. I was drowning. I was hopeless. I was lost. I was in darkness. I was in the sea being tossed to and fro, and somebody had to save me. So, you know, I was perfect for Christianity because I was somebody that had no self-confidence. I didn't believe in me. I didn't like me. I mean, from a little boy, even my orientation was wrong. Even the things that I thought about in the physical realm weren't accepted by my family, my friends, my spiritual community. So think how that must feel to grow up feeling that way about yourself. I mean, you eventually think, something's wrong with me. I mean, could they all be wrong? Could God and my parents and the preacher and my whole family be wrong, or am I wrong? So eventually you say, well, I guess I'm wrong. And then you start thinking of yourself as somebody that's broken, or something's wrong with you. And you quit loving yourself at some point. And when you don't see yourself as that treasure, then you're not going to be very good at giving away treasures to people. Your whole purpose in life kind of gets squashed if you have a low opinion of who you are. You are so amazing and so beautiful, every single one of you, and so important in the scheme of things. And none of us are more important or less important than the other, because we're the same. We're all the one. We're all... Anyway, so there's my great wisdom today. I read you a verse, but it was from Catcher in the Rye instead of from David, the psalmist slash adulterer slash murderer. I mean, you know, don't you love it? So, everybody's poop stinks. I said all that to say this. Everybody's poop stinks. Mike told us last night. And there really are people. Now, we used to say that phrase when we were in high school and somebody was real arrogant. And I remember in particular about a quarterback on our football team that just, oh my God, he could play baseball, he could play football, he could play soccer. He drove a 67 Camaro that was souped up. He had the cheerleader girlfriend. He had money. He had, it's like he thought his own poop did not stink. He did. I mean, that's how we used that phrase. It was about somebody that thought they were all that. And Mike expounded our thinking last night about that, and that those of us who believe the lie of the mind are as those whose poop stinketh not, to put it in King James terms. But yea, verily, our dung stinketh. In my King James vernacular, yea, verily, our dung stinketh. And we need to realize that. And I like seeing things from different angles. That's one reason I really love this group, because I see things I never would have imagined. And it's a little shocking, and then you meditate on it and you chew on it, and then it's like, oh, and I love that. And last night, I thought it was funny, after the meeting last night when we were having the fellowship, everybody seemed to have a poop story. Sally's telling us about her stinky poop that she had yesterday afternoon, and somebody else was telling us how hard it was to get the turd out, and it's like, I mean... Somebody else told us about a blowout they had in the toilet. And I mean, it really opened up this whole world to, when people feel that free to start telling their poop stories, because that's kind of a personal thing to me. It's not, I don't poop with other people in the bathroom. If you're one of those people that can be comfortable pooping while another person's shaving, I don't know if I can fellowship with you. I'm not sure if we can get along if you're one of those people. I remember my sister married a gentleman who is one of 12 children, and they had a 3-bedroom house. So the first time I went over to their house and to spend the night, you know, I was a teenager. We had a ball tournament, and I went and spent the night with them because we had to leave at 4 the next morning, and the van was at their house, so I spent the night. It was the most bizarre thing you ever saw. I walked in the bathroom, and one of them was sitting on the toilet, a boy, 20-year-old boy, while his 18-year-old sister was curling her hair in the mirror, while a 14-year-old sister was standing, and while a boy was in the tub taking a shower. I completely lost my mind and freaked out.
Right.
And I was like, no, this can't happen. This can't happen like this. I mean, they weren't being like perverted or weird with it or anything, but they just knew they had one bathroom and 12 children, so they... You know, somebody can comb their hair while somebody poops. No. I'll drive 15 miles to get back home to my home toilet before I'll poop next to somebody at McDonald's. No, no, no. I'd rather poop my pants and change them later than go. But every now and then, you just have to. I mean, when you're on the road, and there you go. I mean, you know, nature's calling. This such a thing happened to me on the way up here on this trip. And I had to go into a truck stop, pilot, you know, gas station / truck stop. And I get in there, and I get all seated, and, you know, there's the messages written on the door. I'm taking notes, getting phone numbers for future sex hookups, you know. Yeah. I'm like, oh, that sounds good. I'd want to date you for sure. So, I'm, you know, they even drew pictures of their genitalia. So I'm like, oh, let me get that number. Does anybody write down numbers from stalls and call them later? I mean, I was sitting there. I was sitting there. They're still putting them up, though. I was sitting there looking at the numbers and thinking, you know what? I've got my cell phone right here. And I thought, why don't I call one of these guys and just see what this is all about? Because I thought it'd be interesting. I've thought about that because I thought there's their numbers advertising what they wanted. And I thought, I think I'll call and have a call and maybe put on speakerphone. And say, hey, I got your number here off the stall wall. And I just thought I'd ask, are you serious about this? Just to see what they'd say. But I didn't do that because someone else came in and there's 11 toilets in a row, but he came to the one next to me. Now, which made me want to get up and move. But I was, you know, I was like, things were in motion and I didn't want to get up and move at that point. So I sit down and I never actually saw the person. I'm assuming it was an elephant who ate Mexican food the night before. And he was wearing boots. I saw cowboy boots that looked to be about size 15 or something under the stall thing like that. And he sat down next to me and I don't want to smell somebody else's poop. Mine doesn't stink. Compared to someone else's, you know, mine I can stand. It's like your own kid can throw up in your lap and you just clean it up. Somebody else's kid throws up in your lap and you throw up on top of it. Just like, no, I can't do another kid throw up. I can do my kid's throw up. That's how I know if I'm supposed to adopt a child. If I can change their poopy diaper or they can throw up on me and it doesn't bother me, I know they're my kid. So that's the test. So there's this baby that comes in December, I'll just gag it. If it pukes on me and I'm okay with it, I'll say, okay, we'll take her. So I'm sitting here, and the guy's in the next stall, and he begins the process. And apparently, I don't know what buffets he had eaten at. I don't know if the food was rotten when he ate it, or if it became rotten as he drove the truck down the road, that he was obviously a truck driver. But it was one of the most bizarre bowel movements I've ever heard in my life. And when I say heard, it wasn't just, I mean, it was the brick or concrete block that fell into the water and splashed water like up over the stall walls. It was that. But more than that, it was the noises that he was making as he was straining to get this poop out. And I'm sitting, and I didn't know we were going to be preaching on poop, or I would have recorded this. I would have recorded it if I had known this, if what Mike was going to be preaching. I just took the, because it got to the point, he was like, and man, my Lamaze class has kicked in, and I reached under the stall and said, here, hold my hand and breathe. Hold my hand, breathe, squeeze my hand, squeeze. I didn't really do that, but I wanted to. I thought, he needs a midwife. A midwife needs to come in there and help this. So that was very distasteful, and I apologize for talking about that. But it's apropos because if this guy's poop stank so bad, and I normally say courtesy flush please, because maybe y'all don't have enough sense to do this. I've taught my children this, but when you're sitting on the toilet pooping, when that first turd comes out, please politely reach back and match that handle so your poop smell doesn't cover up the house, and then patiently wait on the next poop to fall out. And when it does, if you hear something hit the water, that means flush again. So you reach back and you flush again. I don't care if you have to flush 18 times. That way the poop smell doesn't. But if I'm in a restroom, if I walk into a restroom and it smells like that, I always say, courtesy flush, please. Because that's just what you need to do. You don't need to sit there on top of it, floating around, stinking up the whole room. Well, I was afraid to do that with this guy because he had size 15 cowboy boots on. And anybody that made the noises that he was making, I was not going to challenge by asking them for a courtesy flush because it might not turn out as well as, you know, I was thinking. Plus, there seemed to be some sort of window between his stall and mine over the, not right where we were sitting, but right over there that he could have reached through with a gun and killed me if he didn't like me. So anyway, as I sat there, not knowing that we were going to be learning about our own poop stinking when we got here, I sat there thinking how disgusting that is. And I actually had the thought, boy, I'm glad mine doesn't smell like that. But it probably does to somebody else. And Robbie and I had this argument last night, and he actually said to me, mine doesn't stink. Talking about his own. I said, it does. When you go to the bathroom and poop and leave the bathroom, I know you've been there, and it's not a pleasant odor. He said, no, it doesn't. And so he's one of those people that thinks his poop don't stink. Literally. But when we took it over, he understands the principle of it, and he understands what we're teaching and understands. But that guy yesterday, I don't have a watch. I left my too many L Rolex at home. What? Oh, good. I'm wrapping up. No, I'm thinking. I thought about this guy sitting there last night after I got back to the hotel room. Thank y'all for that hotel room. That we've stayed in 100 hotel rooms, 200. The best one we've ever stayed in. It is so wonderful. Thank you so much. I thought about that guy last night, and I wrote these three notes about him. Number one, his poop stank. Number two, he knew it, and he didn't care. And number three, he was not judging anybody's poopy smell. He was free. There was something about him. I couldn't have done that. I couldn't have sat there and stunk up that bathroom like that without doing something about it. In my life, I began to tie this into what we talked about last night in the mind and the judgment. See, here's the thing. If you think your own poop don't stink, and that's what religion does to you. Religion teaches you that your poop doesn't stink, or that they have the remedy for poop, for stinky poop, and the remedy for it is repent and, you know, confess and receive and believe and pray, and now my poop don't stink. No, it still stinks. That did not cover it up. Where am I? Here's religion. Religion says your poop stinks, but we can fix it. Your poop stinks, but here's some Hawaiian breeze, because everybody who stands in Hawaii smells what's in this can, trust me. It's exactly like being a Hawaiian breeze. Which they're having quite a breeze this week, I'm hearing down there in Hawaii. Yeah, we send good vibes and love to them. But here's religion. Your poop stinks, but we're going to mask it. We're going to cover it up. If you can pray and repent and believe and receive and confess, and, you know, depending on which part of religion you're in, you have to go through all your motions of it, and the poop stinks, but we can fix it. And that guy didn't care. And I care about my stinky thoughts and about the things. But part of it tells me that I'm not as free. But I believe religious people, here, I wrote this down, religious people don't think their poop stinks, and consequently, they think everyone else's poop does stink. So I wrote that down, and I began to think about it. So how much of me thinking how stinky his poop was had to do with me not thinking mine is? Because if I don't think my poop stinks, I become a judge. And the most judgmental people in the world are people that think their act is all together because they got saved. They prayed, they repented, they confessed, they did all the right things, but those crack whores aren't doing the right thing over there. And those gays and those people, they're not matching our book, they're not repenting of their sin, they're not doing this and that. So it elevates people who think their poop doesn't stink, that's religious people, that's the Pharisees, they put themselves on the toilet seat, or excuse me, the judgment seat, same thing, same exact thing, where a lot of poop flows, that's the judgment seat. So you sit on that judgment seat and you judge all the other smells coming from all the other stalls, and you don't even realize that your own poop stinks. Here's religion. There's one in every bathroom that you can, you know, let's mask it now. This will kind of cover it up. There's an answer way better than that. And I got to thinking, so what do I need to do? I can't stop pooping, but we can be more responsible poopers. And there's a way to do that. I've thought about this in my life, and I want my children to be responsible poopers. So there's some certain steps you can take. Don't poop in public if you can help it. But if you can't help it, there's certain things you can do. Number one, you can cleanse yourself. Not to be graphic, but I've got some tools here that maybe some of you have never even heard of. And this will help you. These are flushable wet wipes. They're like a dollar for like 50 of them. Have you ever had a child or an adult or somebody that went to the bathroom and they didn't clean themselves good and they still smelled like poop? And it was as bad as the poop in the bathroom because they carried it around with them? That's what we do with our thinking. Yeah. We don't cleanse ourselves. We don't, and if we don't cleanse ourselves properly, when the poopy thoughts are coming out of our minds, if we don't properly clean ourselves, then that carries over to wherever we are in life. And whatever we're doing in life, that smelly poop is going to carry over because we did not properly cleanse ourselves. So how do we cleanse ourselves from all unrighteousness? How do we do that? Well, the church says that we, flushable wipes in the natural, how do we do it spiritually? The church says we tell a priest our sins and we do penance and we do Hail Marys and we do Our Fathers and we ask forgiveness and we confess our sin and we believe that we're forgiven and we get baptized and we thank Jesus for what he did at the cross and we, I mean, there's all those things. That's how you cleanse yourself from unrighteousness in the church world. But how do we do it over here? Which is, what is our wet wipe? To me, they're just like, they're like love wipes that we apply to ourselves. I don't want any of y'all using my flushable wipes on me. I want to do that to myself. And we all have the ability to cleanse ourselves. We don't need a Savior to do it. We don't need anybody else outside of us to do it. We can clean up our own mess. And there's something even better than that. I don't know if y'all have discovered VIP or poop-pourri. Yeah. If y'all have not discovered poop-pourri, this stuff is amazing. You go into the bathroom, you're about to take a poop, you squirt 3 squirts of it in the toilet. It forms a film on top of the water. You politely sit down and you poop, and the poop falls and plunges beneath the film, and it spreads out, and then it makes the film back on top of the water. The poop is under the film and cannot be smelled.
No.
Absolutely. Y'all are welcome to try this afterwards if anybody would like.
Is it that ad with that?
Yeah, and it works. I thought it was a joke. I thought it was a joke. I thought it was a joke, and I bought some in the checkout line at Walmart. And I said, we're going to check this out. Because one of my children, I won't mention her name, rhymes with Bowie. I don't know why, but her poop stinks so bad. Much worse. Wesley smells like flowers. Chloe, by comparison. But Chloe's poop, especially when we first got her, something about her diet or something, but it just, so I brought home my poopery or my VIP, sprayed it in the toilet. I said, go ahead, Chloe. And I stood there trying to smell, and you couldn't smell because it falls beneath the greasy surface. And if you'll do a little test on it, like if you just spray it in the toilet, you can kind of see a film on the water. And if you just take like a grape and drop it in there, you can watch it like spread apart and then go back together. And then it's underneath the, this works. So a little advertisement for VIP. Somebody's made millions of dollars off of this, and it keeps your bathroom from smelling. You can sit right there on top of it and not smell your own poop if you use this. Now, what is this? It's just love. Love covers a multitude of poop. The scripture says that. No, it says sin. Love covers a multitude of sin. Love covers that multitude, in keeping with last night's message, the whole mind thing that we have going on can be covered with love. And not only can you cover your own, but that's the idea, is to cover your own, to be responsible. And to cover your own mind messes, mind poops, cover your own. But it also benefits others. Because if I'm taking care of my own smells, then you'll be blessed because of it. And it's not my job to go take care of yours. If anybody jumps up and says, I'm going to the bathroom to take a poop, I'm not going to run in there and help you. I'm not going to spray for you. I'm not going to clean you up. That's all your business. This is something you do to yourself or don't do. So we'll continue this later because it's my time. So there you go. Your poop stinks, but we shouldn't have to smell it. There's my part two to the poop message. Your poop stinks, but we should not have to smell it. And thank y'all very much for allowing me to share. I got them right here. Just in case I had to go to the bathroom. Do you want to take a 5-minute bathroom break?
Let's take a 10-minute break.
10-minute break? All right. We'll be right back with Miss Dana.